Yeah. Uh-huh. Listen up. Yeah. I can see you're new to this. You ain't got no job. You ain't got no experience. You're entry level. You ain't got no qualifications, baby. You're entry level. You're entry level. You're entry level, baby. You're entry level. Ooh, yeah.
Get the groceries you need or a backup meal from your favorite local restaurant delivered with DoorDash. For a limited time, you can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code Brooks. That's 25% off, up to a $10 value, and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app and enter code Brooks. Subject to change. Terms apply. Yo, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I'm at his house. We are doing this intro while the Cowboys are in the third quarter of the playoffs. He loves it. He cannot wait to be on this podcast and not watch his favorite team in the playoffs. Nick Turner.
Hi. Cowboys, football, that's just a leisure activity. When it's time to work, Brooks,
okay.
I'm about the work. I'm about making content.
Okay.
And I'm about pleasing my fans.
That's great.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Well, our guest this week.
Big fan of mine.
Big fan of yours.
Usually I don't know who it is when we start recording, mm-hmm. but today I know it's my comedy left arm, Nick Vatterott.
Nicky V.
Yeah.
Big fan of Nicky V. Cannot wait. He's coming back. We're going to talk. But we haven't done it yet. I've got to go.
Funny.
He's pretty funny.
You don't say that a lot about a lot of comedians.
No, you don't.
It's like, yeah, like what's the interesting thing about this comedian? You know, it's like mustache.
Right.
But with Nick, you're like, he's the guy that was really funny.
Yeah, he's the guy that was very funny. I remember one show I did for you guys. There's a poster of it in this house somewhere where you misspelled my name. That's how not good of friends we
were
yet.
But you admitted that your family screwed up the spelling.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Allegedly, the two E's on the Whelan was the... this is from my brother's point of view. The two E's on the Whelan...
Those are the Hatfields.
They're the ones
and the
who,
one E.
They're the ones who went... fought for the South in the Civil War, allegedly. So that's nice to know.
That is such bullshit. But I love that somebody made that up.
I know.
And that in whatever year you learned that, it was probably important to both of you.
I think my brother told me like 2 years ago. I'm like,
the wrong side won.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess I'm a Southern gentleman. But so the show I did.
You are no gentleman, sir.
The show, I'm trying to give you both a compliment. Just wait. Let me give it to you. I come and I do the show in New York. I moved to New York. It's at Union Hall. You and Vatterott, did this long bit where you played ZZ Top's Sharp Dressed Man and you bought a little kid's suit. And you just cut it up and you tried to fit it on you, I think. Do you remember this bit?
Sorry, there was a ref in the kicker. It was very exciting. Good. Say that again.
Oh my just got God.
It's time to work now, but before it was time to watch that kick.
Incredible. We're going to quick
intro. No. It's a first down. No big deal. Everybody gets it. We'll cut it out. Say it again. Just go again. You can't cut that out?
No, I'm giving myself a little window to see. Okay, so we had to cut, we had to edit. We're editing back in right now because the Cowboys got a first down and Nick got distracted. So we're going to make this a quick intro.
I was
giving you a big compliment that you and Vatterott ran a good show.
Yes.
And I came to it one time and I was blown away that you spent so much money on a tidy baby suit while ZZ Top Sharp Dressed Man played and you cut it up.
Yes. This was my show. I don't want anyone out there thinking that was our show.
Okay, well, you were co-hosting it with, you and Vatterott were doing bits?
No, we were doing bits, but the conceit of my show was called Nick Turner and Acquaintances, mm-hmm. and then I would have some comedians I know mm-hmm. Do stand-up, but also I had sketch performers join me, different ones every show. Well, Nick joined a lot.
Yes.
Because Nick really likes to spend money on costumes. I've never seen anything like it in his life. Like, if he has... In my life, if he has $300, he doesn't think, well, I guess I'm $600 away from rent. He thinks, I can buy two gorilla suits. And I've never seen anyone just on a whim. You know, I'm like, hey, I have a doctor's sketch. And he's like, great. I bought three nurses' outfits and a doctor's fucking head mirror.
He's the best. Yeah. And we'll just get straight to his interview.
Oh, no.
Why not?
There's got to be more.
Well, there's not. I'm going to go have a really nice talk.
I don't need to get more emails about, like, why isn't there more Turner?
You're getting those emails?
No, but I just don't know if anyone knows my email on this show. We got to run those mugs again. But
all right, nickjturner@gmail.com. Email him literally anything, or get the mugs if you want. But no, I got to go. With me, the reason we don't have listener mail is I came back early from... I turned my show, and I thought for the very final time, for the 11th final time, left to go to the desert. Got a little email on my way out. Not done. So came back. Got to go back to work tomorrow. So I got no listener mail, and I'm going to turn in for the 16th time next week.
Yeah. People don't understand that even though it's good, it sucks.
Yeah. It sucks, yeah. so that'd be it, you know, as long as it's never a no, I have a job.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you're getting a set amount of money.
Yeah, no, it's just it's taking the amount of money I make per hour and making it below minimum wage slowly.
I wonder if you could go back and look at your contract and you're like, I wonder how many reversions they can ask for. Oh, no. No, I worked that out when I made my pilot. I was like, I worked out all the time, and it was definitely less than a minimum wage.
I think I'm making $3 an hour mm-hmm. with how much I've worked on this. Mm-hmm. $3 to $4 an hour. And I'll tell you what, very happy with that $3 to $4 an hour.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's a lot of hours.
Yeah, most comedians are getting $1, $2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm up there with the $3 to $4 wow. an hour guy.
Congrats, man.
You know what we shouldn't do? But like rough estimate, like next week, I when I'm not working... We'll crunch the numbers of how long we think we've worked on comedy and how much we've made. And it is not going to be great.
Oh, no. That's no. I mean, Lyra wanted to make a budget, and which always just makes me want to go to bed. There's nothing that makes me sadder than thinking I got to go look at how much I make. No, I don't know how much I make. That is not important to me. I don't want to cry.
Right.
I don't want to do my taxes.
Well, it's been fun.
Has been fun.
Well, you know what the crazy thing about Vaderad is that we'll talk about is...
He makes a lot of money.
Yes. He makes a lot of money in the least Vaderad way.
Oh, and he'll never admit it.
He is the quirkiest, weirdest, most funny guy I know. Yeah. And he works for Bill Maher. Which doesn't add up to me.
Well, Bill Maher, I don't know if you know this, has a comedy show on HBO.
I understand why Nick works for him. Yeah. I just don't understand that of all his talents, why they're pushed into that show.
That's true. But have you ever been anywhere and thought, oh, this person is doing a good job at their job? No, none of us are in the right job.
Yeah.
That's the thing about life.
Okay.
And it's crazy. I've never gone to a place where someone was working and thought, hey, you fit in here. No, I thought, are you the dumbest man alive? That's what I think anywhere. But if I had a show on HBO, I mean, I would hire Nick.
I would go. Yes, of course I would hire Nick too.
But not me.
No, I would not hire either of us. But yeah, no, Nick's great. And it's just like, Bill Maher's not cutting up baby suits. He don't come out in gorilla costumes. I want to see Nick in there. I want to see a Nick joke.
Nick and I have a nice shorthand when we talk on the phone, because mm-hmm. his inclination is to make a bit first. Mm-hmm. And usually that's fine. But sometimes I've got other stuff to do. So he starts the bit and I say, not today. And I tell him what the thing is. There's no pushback. That's how he appreciates it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he'll do a bit, and I'm excited to get it to crack a little.
Oh, this is all lies. I don't know what we're about to hear.
Yeah, I have no idea what he's about to say. I got to go interview him right now.
No, he was a waiting legend.
Well, he's already done the podcast. We already talked about all that.
Oh, you're
right. This is a free for all. This is a Nick Vaderad number 2.
Incredible.
We're doing repeats because I don't have.
Have you gotten any feedback?
New friends.
Now that you're doing repeats, has anyone given you feedback that they like it or do not like
it? I'm going to shoot you straight. I have not opened up the entry level with brookswheelan@gmail.com in a month and a half.
That's why you haven't been getting my dinner invitations. I forgot your which email you use.
I will go look at those when I can do things that aren't my pilot.
Sure.
I can't right now, which is why we're just talking and having fun, and I'm having repeat guests because I just am so stressed.
Well, no one likes repeat guests more than me.
You were the one who's
I want to be on every episode, and I want everyone else to.
I love it. All right. Well, enjoy this week's episode with Nick Vatterott. You're going to love it. Well, we love him. And listen to Get Rich Nick. Right, Nick?
Yeah, Get Rich Nick. This week, I lost money on the Golden Globes.
Oh, my God. Hundreds. Can we talk about it for a second?
Hundreds.
Because you were like, yo, I got the Golden Globes. You would not stop talking when we were camping.
I was convinced. Olivia, you're telling me. Olivia Colman at plus 550 isn't a fucking lock. Look, Diana Spencer, I don't know if you saw that movie.
No, she dies. I don't need to see it.
It sucks.
Okay.
Before, like when people thought that was the only movie that was going to come out this year, mm-hmm. they were like, oh, well, she's going to get the Oscar. And no one ever changed their mind.
You know what? First movie I'm excited to see in fucking forever, Jackass 4.
Anyway, it went to Nicole Kidman.
I know it went to Nicole Kidman, but I was saying, like, I've never been less excited for Oscars or movie nominations because not a fucking movie came out I was interested in,
you know,
the last 2
Jackass,
years.
It might be Jackass's year.
I hope so. I cannot wait for Jackass. I can't wait.
Well, here we go. Ad for Jackass. Next up, Nick Vatterott.
Hold on. What movie do you want to see?
God damn it.
What are you excited about?
Most?
Yeah, that's coming out. There hasn't been a good movie in fucking 4 years.
I want to see, I do want to see Belfast, but I don't know if I'm that excited for it.
No, you're not excited for it.
Lyra, what am I excited for?
What are you guys excited for? Jackass 4. That's what you're excited for.
I mean, we love Jackass. We're big Jackass fans.
Who's not? It's a perfect show. All right, well.
And Otis met Johnny Knoxville recently.
I heard about this. Very jealous, very jealous.
And we did not tell him that Otis's middle name was Tennessee. Yeah. But we thought, oh, we could have said that.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, Johnny Knoxville,
mm-hmm.
wow, the best.
Yeah, that's why I'm excited to see his movie. He's a great guy.
Lyra, have you ever been less intimidated to talk to a celebrity that big that you've enjoyed so much just because of how they are?
No, that's why I forgot to tell him that my favorite is Tennessee.
Well, this
he's the fucking best.
Well, reach out
to him. And Nick Vatterott's great.
What? Way to get us back on track. Enjoy this episode with Nick Vatterott. Thanks for listening. I'm going to get some new guests.
Don't.
No, it's fun. We gotta.
Hey, guys, write in and tell us which comedian who's been canceled unjustly you want Brooks to interview.
Well, I can't check Twitter right now. I made fun of Joe Rogan, and now it's all a bunch of things about how I should die. So you got to email entrylevelbrooksman@gmail.com because I'm staying clear of my goddamn Twitter for a fucking week or two because it is pretty mean right now. But enjoy this episode with Nick Vatterott. You've got back-to-back meetings, errands to run, and chores to take care of. What's the secret to clearing your to-do list? A little help from DoorDash. You can get dinner, household essentials, and everything on your grocery list delivered. Get what you want to eat right now and right to your door with DoorDash. With over 300,000 partners, you can support your neighborhood go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Popeyes, Chipotle, and Cheesecake Factory. I'm in Washington, D.C. right now. I honestly just used DoorDash to get Potbelly sandwiches delivered to me. It was not available on the other apps. It wasn't. DoorDash had it. I got Potbellies to my room. It was great. Then I fell asleep after I ate it. It was awesome. Big shout out to DoorDash for bringing Potbellies to my hotel room. So, guys, for a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code Brooks. That's 25% off, up to a $10 value, and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code Brooks. That's my name, Brooks. Don't forget, that's code Brooks for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply. Yo, he's here. Welcome to Entry Level, Nick Vatterott.
So good to be here. This is my first outside podcast I've ever done.
Really?
Yeah. I think this is the preferred way. I love the acoustics of Earth.
Well, I like the less transmissibleness of plagues.
Yeah. So where are we? Should we just get right into it? Is it real? Like the black, year three.
The Black Death.
Pandemic year three. I am so excited for year three of the pandemic. I think this is going to be my best pandemic year yet.
You know, I don't know if I've talked about it, but I had a joke when we thought we were done. I'm not doing another pandemic. Mm-hmm. And it's showing me pretty quick whether or not I meant it.
Oh, so I think maybe you jinxed it?
It's just like, you know, we all have a really terrible cousin or uncle that's like, trips to Hawaii are fucking nothing right now. And you're like, well, don't do that. And they went, and I'll tell you who's still alive and kicking it, that guy.
Of course.
That's me this time.
Yeah.
I'm done not taking advantage of this pandemic.
Yeah, I know. That was like, it's so funny. I was listening to some old sets, and I did Milwaukee Laughing Tap. I think I did it in February of 2020.
Right.
Before it got.
Yeah. When it was like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, this might be a week off school.
I wore a mask up on stage as a goof.
Incredible.
Because nobody was wearing them yet.
No,
you just
I know.
Heard about
yeah,
it.
No, it's like, dude, yeah.
Yeah. And then I said, yeah, tickets to Wuhan are like nothing right now. And it brought down the house. And it's like, and then cut to, you know, 3 weeks later, NBA shuts down. Everyone's working from home, you know.
Yeah.
But it was so funny in the beginning when it wasn't anything yet.
No. Yeah. Because like you couldn't wrap your head around what was going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
No way.
No. I'm watching Station 11 now.
What's that?
It's some show on HBO Max.
Okay.
And they have a pandemic on that. I think for some reason, Hollywood shot a lot of pandemic TV shows and movies and put them in the can and then had to sit on them for a while.
I think they did it.
Because this is like the third. This is no exaggeration. I watched The Stand. Mm-hmm. On CBS All Access, which is about a pandemic in the very beginning. They're all wearing masks, airborne flu. There was another one about like, I forget what it was. It was someone like Amazon where they were like Nazi hunters. I think Al Pacino was in
it. I think it was called Nazi Hunters.
Was it?
It was pretty specific.
I think it was. Maybe I'm confusing the two. But this one was a flu-oriented thing too.
The Nazi Hunters one also had a pandemic in it?
If it's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
You know what? Like, I also like, I created a shitstorm for myself this week, but the fact that Nazi Hunters was like, this isn't enough, we need a pandemic. You know what I mean? Right. Leads to why I got in a shitstorm on Twitter this week, because we were doing this is a long time ago, and I talked shit on Joe Rogan this week on Twitter. I didn't realize what I knew what I was doing, but I didn't, and it is a fact, I can't go on Twitter for probably a month. I gotta let this blow over.
The army went after you.
Oh boy! But it's like Summer like looked and she's like, you can't. This is bad. Hmm. So I'm
what'd
like,
what'd you say?
I just said I miss when Joe Rogan was just a bad comic. No one respected. Like I miss that.
You took it to a low place.
Well, I miss it. It's true. There was a time where that was the case with that guy.
Wait, but the thing you miss is a dig at him.
Well, now I gotta. Now he's on fucking news. I miss when he wasn't on news, and this all stems from him taking a dig at me.
Oh, he started it. He shot.
Well,
first?
No, I mean he did, but on stage.
Okay.
And it's basically that Nazi Hunters isn't enough. We got to put a pandemic in it because I was doing a fucking Comedy Store, and I go, and it was supposed to be new jokes only night. New jokes only.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like nothing you've rehearsed. And driving there was when Jurassic World was coming out.
Okay.
And I was like, they were on dirt bikes. The guys on a dirt bike. And I was like, basically this long, not good bit, but it was doing well of like, dinosaurs aren't enough anymore. Now we got to give them the X Games. Like what will satiate us? Like we need to accept dinosaurs are interesting enough for their own movie. And it was so fun. I love that joke. And then Joe Rogan went up after me, did not do well, fucking was eating shit. And then he was like, sorry, I don't dress like I'm from Silver Lake, digging at me.
I see.
Did not like. Brooks did not like.
I see.
So I haven't liked him since then.
So he shot first.
Yeah, but in like a veiled attempt to get a laugh, which is even like, I'm just like, that guy fucking sucks at stand up. And I miss when that was just the case. Sorry. But then I'd say that on Twitter and people, that's a religion.
Oh, well, I mean, anytime. The thing is like, I'm very weird about criticize. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of warring between comedians.
Right, I understand.
Now, and I just kind of want to stay out of it. I don't really. I feel like we're not. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how healthy this is. The whole war between like the, you know, there's a certain scene in New York and a certain other scene in New York, and there is some sort of like weird tribal war that's going on that I think really sort of unfolded after I left. I mean, I caught
turf wars. Yeah.
Yeah, turf wars of topic turf, I guess. And
no,
and,
look, man, and I get what you're saying. I don't like
and
comedy attack.
I didn't want to stay out of it. I got a little involved in it on accident by just having a conversation. I didn't attack anybody.
But what did you do? Because like here's what tipped me to this is like there's a fucking thing on CNN where Joe Rogan's talking about myocardium or something, some fucking like cardiovascular disease. Right. I'm just like, I miss when you just were a bad comic, man. Like I fucking like that was cute, and that was I could get behind. Oh, you like the punches?
But you can't just say you miss when he was a comic. You have to do the extra day.
Because of the Jurassic Park thing.
Well, you got it. Did you bring up the Jurassic Park thing?
No.
No. So nobody knows.
Nobody
why
knows that
mad.
I specific have a specific moment where I was like, yo, fuck this dude. And I'm sure he doesn't even remember it.
So he does. By the way, he probably doesn't even know this war is happening.
Well, why would he? He's so fucking famous.
It is. So I think there is like a thing though when a comic becomes so big that they're not like part of our world anymore.
No.
It feels like they've become a different thing.
Totally.
And they should be, you know, they are now in a different spot to be, you know, lend itself to criticism if it needs it.
So that's my only, this is why I was like, fuck it. I'm going to like, I will not like, cause it used to be, you know, 2 years ago being on his show would really help. That would be great.
Sure.
And now I'm like, this is just fucking, I think what he's doing is bad.
But I mean, wouldn't it be more productive for somebody who disagrees with him to go on the show rather than this whole like?
But that's what happened. He like this guy just says bullshit. I can't stand like bullshit. Like he just do whatever. All
right,
I'm doubling down. But I mean
that Robert Malone, you know, podcast that came out that everybody was like sort of going off on.
The one that broke me, because I try not
have
to talk shit.
Have you listened to it yet?
I just saw. I did the thing you're not supposed to do, which was I saw cherry picked clips and I just got pissed.
So I'm on hour 3 of listening to it. Because I'm fact checking everything as it goes. And it's a little.
Turner told me not to bring this up, by the way.
Oh, with me?
Yeah.
Why?
He said that you're fact-checking this Joe Rogan episode.
But I went into it with an open mind, you know?
I know.
And I just want to hear, I'm like, okay, well, if he's right about this, I need to know this, mm-hmm. you know? Because a lot of the, you know, I thought it was funny that the whole 270, you know, doctors came out after him. And my first thought was, that's not a lot of doctors.
No, that's not a lot of doctors.
That's an underwhelming amount of doctors.
Yeah, there's like millions of doctors.
Yeah, and only 270?
200 were like,
It was like 270 countries came out after this, I'd be like, well, that's a lot. But 270 is a little weak.
Yeah.
But I was like, well, so I went into it with an open mind listening to it. And then like, yeah, I don't know. It's just.
I just miss when he was just a fucking bad comic. I just miss that. I hate that we're having this conversation. That's what I'm saying. There
you
was
miss
a,
when he was. Were you ever friendly with him? Were you ever friends with him?
No. Uh-huh. I just miss when I didn't like. We didn't. He didn't come into my fucking daily life.
I've got no. I got no issue with him. But I don't think. I don't know.
I don't have any issue with. I only recently have an issue with him since he's gotten to this level. Of being, of having just things.
I'll say this. So the microcarditis thing.
Myocarditis?
Yeah, myocarditis. There was a clip going around where a guest on his show said that, yeah, this is a side effect of the vaccine in children.
Right.
But more children are getting it from COVID than are getting it from the vaccine.
Right.
And Rogan challenges him on that. They live... You know, look it up, and then Rogan goes. I think Rogan tweeted, "You know what? if I'm going to get fact-checked on my own show, I hope it would be by my guest, who I respect. And he was right, I was wrong. But I thought was interesting that he challenged this guy on this particular fact, but he let Malone kind of like run 3 hours without one single fact check. And, you know, the thing I don't like is that when people say, oh, Nick, you're a comedian, and I know you have to serve a liberal narrative, that gets under my skin.
No, me too. But I really like upsetting people who think I'm on their team. It's very fun.
Oh, you like that. You like to be an instigator.
Yeah, well, I like my dad's like, you know, my dad's Republican or whatever, and he'll be like, Joe Biden. I was like, I hate Joe Biden. You know? He's like, well, who do you right. like? I go, nobody. Like, right. what? Like, but I also, like, dude, I just can't. Like, I'm only rallying against the fact that I miss when Joe Rogan wasn't this famous and we could just ignore him when he got facts wrong. That was very wonderful.
That's what you want to go back to it. You want to go back to that. You want to go back to before that Jurassic World set.
Yeah.
Before he shot fire.
Look,
I'll
be goddamn honest. If he went up and he said, that guy's funny.
None of this would have happened.
Not one word out of me. I'd be like, nobody gets him. Nobody gets him. He gets it. He might not have all the facts, but he understands comedy, and that's all that matters.
It's so funny. I've had so many conversations with people.
We figured it out. What my problem?
Where I'm just like, you know, somebody said something nice to me once, and I'm always kind of been like, well, you know, they're all right. You know, he liked my act once, so therefore I think Cosby's not the worst. Cosby said nice that one time. Yeah, yeah. So I was like, well, you know, I mean, he never asked. No one. Media is not listening to his side of the story.
And yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Okay. But but this is fun conversation to have with you because we don't talk that often. Like, what you just put out a special that is
Disingenuous.
But I haven't watched yet because I've been fucking losing my mind on other shit, getting myself kicked off Twitter. well, how did you make it? What happened?
So Chicago's where I made it. So Chicago, the best part of stand-up comedy.
Where I first saw you. For the first time ever, I went to New York. Not Jesus. I met you in Chicago. I go to New York City. No. The day I moved to Chicago, I didn't know anything. Didn't know anybody. 2007, 2008
right.
maybe.
Right.
2008. The summer of 2008. I go and I see TJ Miller's going away party. He gets on the show Carpoolers at the Fizz.
That's right.
You go up before him.
Which was Comedians You Should Know.
Comedians You Should
before
Know.
Before it was at Timothy O'Toole's.
Yes. And you went up before him, and you did your big paper, your set list set, which I'll put a link to in this episode description. So goddamn funny. I saw you the day I moved to Chicago.
It's interesting because that show is... That, so, you know, Disingenuous, it's me running around a bunch of different shows, and Comedians You Should Know is like the first chunk of the special.
Okay.
Because that show was always so supportive and fun, and that was like, and I always was able to kind of, I feel like, you know, you got your like mainstream audiences, you know, where you got to do the club stuff, then you have your alt audiences that kind of are actually put off by the club stuff and would rather see something crazy. And Comedians You Should Know was always like a little mixture of both. You could kind of go up and do a club set and get a reaction, but they'd be open to putting on monster hands and pretending you're a monster comedian. So that was like, but you know, running it. So you get to Chicago, and I'm sure this, because did you do stand up in Iowa?
Yeah. So wait, everybody,
at the club,
Penguins.
Right, but you didn't have that experience of Chicago running around and doing a bunch of sets.
I did when I moved to Chicago.
That's what I'm saying. In Chicago.
So the day I went and saw you, so I had been in Kansas City running around doing a lot of sets, driving around the Midwest doing a lot of sets, and then the day I got to Chicago and went and saw you, TJ, and other dudes at Comedians You Should Know, it clicked in my head. I was 19 of like maybe 20. Oh my God, there's people like me in the world.
Right.
And it was like seeing you and TJ do shit that I was like, okay, that's what I want to do.
Right.
I'm clear. In my head, I'm there. I'm not.
But yeah, I loved getting to Chicago and being like, oh, there's other people that want to do this.
Do this on a level that will ruin their lives doing it. Right. That will destroy themselves to do this.
But now, not only that, all we want to do.
Yeah, that's it.
All we want to do.
So, okay, but. All right, so let's build up to Disingenuous, because when did you get to Chicago and where did you come from?
I mean, I was in Columbia, Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
And I would do stand-up once every 6 months.
Deja vu?
I think that was the first place I ever did it, at the comedy club, and for a contest that I've lost. And then first time I ever did stand-up was at that comedy, at the college club's comedy contest, and lost. Didn't do stand-up again for another year.
Okay.
Went up, lost again, but I was like, I should try this again. 6 months later, I think I drove to Funny Bone in St. Louis.
St. Louis.
6 months after that, I think I drove to Kansas City once. Mm-hmm. So I did it like 4 times in 2 years. And then finally was like, well, me and college we've been on a break. It's time to move on. and so that's when I went to Chicago, because Chicago, Second City, came through Columbia. And I was like, oh, people are doing this too.
Because
the only thing I was doing in Columbia was I was writing a humorous column in the newspaper.
I did that.
What was your column called?
It was called, The Ledge. But it was,
That was the name of your column?
It wasn't my own. I wrote the Friday version of The Ledge.
Oh, okay.
So it was
okay.
A top 10 list of like college stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't my own. It was just like I was the Friday guy.
Okay.
So what was yours?
Mine was my humble opinion.
Okay.
Which, you know, that was probably the most Dave Barry thing I could think of at that time. I'm sure that is every college kid's name of their. It's like Tiger mascot.
I have a joke about no one's more confidently wrong than a college student.
Oh, right.
You're so aggressively incorrect.
I was so certain of everything, too.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You are positive, but you are wrong.
You know what's crazy, though? The first incarnation of social media backlash I ever got was I would write a column, and then I think they put it out Tuesdays and Thursdays, or Tuesdays and Fridays. I'd do a column on Tuesday. Friday, there'd be letters to the editor about my column.
Whoa.
So that was the equivalent of like Twitter comments, you know, people mad at your Joe Rogan comment. And the two big ones I wrote was
that was mean a lot more, though, when somebody has to write in.
I had put a lot more effort into it.
Yeah.
But it does definitely whittle it down. It sort of shows why everything's so bad now, because you can just do it while you're driving now, you know?
So, like, you get to tell someone they suck while you're driving.
You don't even, and then there's no human.
Okay, so your two big ones.
I wrote that ADHD was an overdiagnosed disease. Mm-hmm. I was the Robert Malone of Ritalin.
Explain Robert Malone.
That was the
I'm misinformed. Yeah, but we found out my real problem is that you didn't say I was funny.
wait, what?
I said I'm misinformed, but we diagnosed that my only real problem was that one show.
Oh, that one episode.
Yeah. The one show. The
oh, right, store. Right. Mm-hmm. if you'd worn a different outfit that day, it would have been.
Literally. I didn't have my fucking hat on backwards. My mesh hat on backwards.
It is lame to dig. I always...
No, dude, he was...
When a comic digs at the comic before them because they're doing bad, that's pretty dumb.
That's my problem.
Yeah.
It really
I'm
shows.
I'm on your side with that. That's so... I always hated when... a comic, would do a dig at the comic, especially if you guys don't know each other too. That's sort of the
Didn't
thing.
Know.
Yeah, to do a dig at them because they're doing bad is the absolute worst.
Right.
And then to do it because also just to do it for a cheap laugh is always bad.
No,
too.
It's terrible. Only if the comic before you like started a fight by being wrong.
Yeah,
then you'd be like, yikes. But that's it. Also, like any. I was opening for John Oliver, and I was just like, as an opener, you don't get to make fun of the audience. You just can't.
Sure.
Because that's not your audience.
Yeah.
And like, John doesn't have this problem, but I do. selling out the show. And sometimes somebody will go before me, I don't know, and they're like, Jesus Christ, nobody's here. I'm like, buddy, you don't think I know that? That's my joke to make.
Right.
You don't get to make fun of how I didn't sell any tickets. I get to make fun of how I didn't sell. Okay.
There is a comic that I did a show once, and so it was in Denver. And we were like kind of like co-headlining, and I did a set, and then
Andrew Overdahl, just say it. I'm joking.
No, it was a non-Denver person. It was somebody who came in town with me.
Joe Rogan.
I didn't know. And I went downstairs, and they got me super high after my set before you know, and so that I get down. I mean, they get me like Denver high, like I very, very, very high.
Lucas Brothers in Denver high, where they missed a show. Right. Do you remember that? They like ate some edibles and they're like, "We're sorry, we're lost."
I've heard several High Plains Comedy Festival stories of the festival getting a comic too high for them to perform. Mm-hmm. But I went upstairs and started watching this person's act, and I'm watching it for like 10 minutes, and I'm so high, but I turned to the person with him like, "He's making fun of me, isn't he?" And they're like, "No." And I was like, and I watched a little bit more. I was like, "I think he's making fun of me." And
you're just so paranoid?
And I couldn't tell if I was paranoid because of that. And then I kept watching, and I was like, "No, he's definitely making fun of me." What it was like, okay, so during my act, there was this drunk heckler, right? And I don't think I was doing
those come with Denver.
I feel like Denver's usually got a cool audience.
One of my worst is ever in Denver.
Really?
At the Comedy Works, which is like my, once again, one bad time, and I'm like, they're not that great.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, well, I don't know. You might be wrong on this.
Right.
Okay, but go on.
This was at like a, I think one of those like, I think it was like a church turned into a theater type places, you know? But I did it. She was like, just, I forget what it was. She was, I'm going to try to remember it as I say it. She was just very drunk and very yelling at me. And just, and so I think I did a cheap crowd work move of being like, what do you do for a living? And then she said, I'm a therapist. And so I go, are you this drunk when you're at your job? Mm. Being like, you know what your problem is? Problem is you want to kill your dad and you want, you know. And
yeah, it's a fun, this so is just, a fun deal with, like, I like this.
That's what I'm doing. I did an Oedipus sort of thing. So then this person goes up after me and does like 15 minutes of a comedian who tells somebody, I think you're having sex with your mom. It was just so weird because that was the Oedipus joke I was making. And he just kept, he wouldn't let it go. And it was a riff. He was riffing this. It wasn't, and I was just like, did he poke his head out at that one moment that I said that to that girl, not knowing that I had tried everything else with this heckler, think that that's just what I was doing with my act.
Right.
It was just so weird, though.
Okay.
To this day, I'm like, why was he so mean to me?
Who was it? To say. Nah. I've been burning bridges this whole podcast.
Nah, I can't get into it. I can't.
But we can get to the bottom of it, and we can find out.
You ready?
Yeah.
Bill Cosby.
I hate it. All right. So you have two things. ADHD is overdiagnosed. This is before you go to Chicago. We're building
up
to
your special.
Yeah,
I was talking to a buddy who had written, because I think like there was like a thing where it said like, do you not like to work? Do you put off doing things? Mm-hmm. Would you rather have fun than do something that's not fun?
Right.
It was all like, how is everybody not answering yes to all this? If you have these things, you have ADHD. Yeah. No.
Are you bored when commercials come on?
Right.
Yeah.
There should be a medicine if you say no to any one of those things. That should be what the medicine's for. And then, so I think that was basically what it. And all these, this was my first taste of, I think one of my biggest, my biggest problems with society is that you can't criticize a portion of a thing without people thinking you're criticizing the entirety of it. And I think every group does this, you know? You can't say, well, I think the police could do a better job of policing without somebody going, oh, so you hate the police.
I hate the police, though.
Well, you're not helping. You're probably why people think that when somebody says it.
Nah.
But you know what I'm saying, though. You know, like, if someone's,
No, of course I get what you're saying, but I was being a comic.
Thank you very much.
I totally get what you're saying. You're like, yeah, it's like, well, I don't know, man. I don't think, like, all cops are great. And they're like, what does that mean? It's like, I think that there's bad, whatever. We get it.
Right.
We understand.
So these people
there's bad teachers, there's bad cops, there's bad fucking
everybody. There's bad liberals, there's bad Democrats.
Oh, mostly.
There's bad, you know, there's everything. And so there's bad burn victims.
Yeah. They're not that burned.
You're milking the system, man. Yeah. That's your toe and that's it.
Yeah.
And now you're being mean to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of your toe.
Yeah.
Well, you got 10 of them, buddy.
Well, 9 now.
And this guy thought I was taking shots over the bow at his child who he goes, "My, I'll have you know that my child really does have ADHD." Mm-hmm. And it's like, I never said that it was a completely made up thing. No. You know, and that was sort of like, I was like, they turned me into like the anti-vaxxer of ADHD. They thought, yeah, I was like, oh, so he just thinks ADHD is not a real thing. It's like, you people are so stupid. I'm just saying it's overdiagnosed. I'm not saying it's not. But that was like my first taste of how the world works, right, when you put your words out in the world for people to like take them. Okay. And the other one was I talked about I had a joke about the Amish article about Mennonites being like, I thought it was unfair to the children who are sick and can't get the medical attention they need because their parents believe in this like magic story,
right?
You know, and I think that like that's where there's like a real world harm. And then people were like, "How dare you? What did a Mennonite ever do to you?" And it's just like,
"What did a Mennonite not do to his kid? That's my problem."
Right? Yeah. So I don't know. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, but I mean, you're just getting the taste of like the smallest amount of backlash.
Yeah.
And then you're like, "Let's go do this forever."
Right.
So you moved to Chicago when?
I guess 2002.
Okay, because by the time I get there, you are like king of the scene.
I think everybody was a king back then.
No, it was. Everybody was. Yeah. When I got there, everyone who was doing well was the king of the scene. there were 10 kings of the scene, yeah, and they were all gods to me.
I mean, I don't know.
What happened?
Very spoiled of the people we came up with, you know?
For sure. But how did this, you came up hard in the Chicago scene, which to me is the most influential comedy scene for me. And growing up in Iowa, very peripheral to what's going on in Chicago. MySpace is happening. You guys are putting out Blurs videos. I'm fucking eating them up. I'm making my own fake Blurs videos at the University of Iowa. For real.
Cool.
I posted it on the Blurs like MySpace thing and was like, hey, I'm doing them too. Realizing like, all right, dude, that's stealing.
Huge deal.
Yeah.
But that's sort of fan.
Well, I mean, I was doing my own joke. I was acting out my own joke, yeah, and shooting it. And, you know, but you know, yeah, also a 19-year-old kid in Iowa who's just like a big fan of Blurs.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't think anybody there was pissed.
No, I bet they dug it. Yeah.
They did dig it. They dug it enough to where they became my friends in L.A.
That's great.
But explain how that all happened. Like, because Blurs, to people who don't know, give us the rundown of everybody.
Well, you know, I mean, I was sort of Blurs adjacent. I did like...
which I even admire more.
I just did like an interview with Sean on Comics Comic, and he was
McCarthy.
Yeah, and, you know, I think he was trying to wrap his head around the social dynamics of it, you know, and I was thinking about it after the interview. I was like, you know what it is? We all did stand-up. You know, but then we had these extracurricular activities outside of stand-up. Mine was sketch and improv. I was at I.O. and Playground Theater and Chemically Imbalanced Comedy, and I was doing all these different sketch groups and everything, right, and all these different improv groups and stuff. And then there was like a lot of people who were working and doing stand-up that wanted outside, you know, a conduit for comedy,
right,
that isn't just stand-up. And so I think that's sort of where Blurs, you know, came about. And you know, and that was, they were nice enough to let me, you know, hop in occasional videos. I did one of Brido's videos. I think I wrote like
Mike Bridenstine
to like blog, because it was blog nerds, Blurs. Right. And so I think Flannery had me do two like guest things. And then when they did they like did a pilot about like a jury, you know, they flew me out to be part of that pilot. You know, just to, so they were always like,
well, that's just it. Like, yeah, that. The scene that I got was a part of was the below all you guys, because when you left, stage time blew up, because you know, you guys created this false narrative in Chicago that open mics are going to be good. So when you guys
there was one good one.
When you guys all left, we were just like getting to perform packed open mics, you know,
right? Shuba's, Lion's,
oh God,
Den.
Shuba's was huge.
Shuba's
Sundays
was great. Yeah.
But I'm just like, what you guys taught my group was like, this is not a, I'm sure there is, and everywhere there is, it's not necessarily a competition. We get better when we all, like, there's a competition, like, I want to be the funniest, but sure, I'm not mad at you if you're the funniest.
There's nothing to get. That's
no.
What I thought that was great about Chicago. There's nothing to get.
No.
There's nobody to, there's no reason to step on anyone's neck to go nowhere.
Exactly.
You know, and so it's very supportive.
It was, but like, supportive in a way that, like, you got to be funny.
You want the respect of the other people.
Right.
That's it. That's all you want.
All you can get in Chicago is respect from the other comics.
It's sort of the opposite of competitiveness.
Yeah.
Where you're just, instead of trying to elbow everybody in the face, you want their face to laugh at your elbow.
Right. Oh, there we go. Nice. Never thought about that. So you're there, but you move there to do improv. How do you end up becoming such a good stand-up?
I want to do all of it.
Oh, okay.
But you'd only done it four times. I did short form. I was doing a short form improv at the college.
Okay.
Writing the column, doing the stand-up once every 6 months.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I want to go to, you know, because I pictured Chicago as like, I pictured it, you know, like in Simpsons when Homer walks down the downtown and all the lights, the neon lights mm-hmm. are flashing to left and right. And I felt that was going to be comedy clubs in every corner.
Right.
I didn't realize that was the 80s I was picturing, that they had all closed. Yeah. 80s was the only one left. And a thing I could have never possibly pictured was happening, which was the DIY scene of comics putting on their own shows.
Right.
And that part was great. Because when I was there, every night of the week, there was one good show.
One good show.
Yeah. Yes.
So you would do the other shows, but then everyone would end up at the one good show.
Yes.
To hang till fucking three.
So it was like Tuesdays, it was Chicago Underground Comedy, which was at the Beat Kitchen. It was Gunther Murphy's first, then it moved to Beat Kitchen. Then there was Wednesdays was Comedians You Should Know, which was at Fizz. Then went over to Timothy O'Toole's. Thursday, Friday was Lincoln Lodge.
Right.
And then, you know, Saturday was probably something I can't remember now. Sunday was Shuba's. Monday was, you know, it used to be the Lion's Den at one point before Shuba's.
Yeah. We would go to Zany's on Mondays by the time I was there because it's when they'd have that little showcase.
Yeah.
The Monday showcase.
Right. Because when I was there... Also, Elevated at Cherry Red was a huge show when I was there. But when that was like another big night of the week. But like, I think that was before Comedians You Should Know came around. That was that show. But when I was there, Monday nights at Zany's, they didn't do that. You know, they you'd go to Monday nights, and it was like there was a sign that said the Comedians of Chicago, and it was four guys that nobody had ever seen before.
Right.
That all lived in the suburbs, probably had a family and stuff. And we were like, this isn't Chicago. This is Schaumburg. This is like, I'm sure these guys ran the scene, you know, 20 years ago.
Right.
And they probably deserve to have a seat here every Monday night for the rest of their life. But we didn't know who these guys were. Mm-hmm. We didn't really think it represented today's Chicago. And so it was cool to see that finally... they started bringing new blood in.
Yeah, it was so it was like this thing at Zany's. It was like a big deal because you could get passed, and this guy Bert Haas, who I don't know if he still runs or not, you could do it like once every 6 months, and he made you do it like three times before he'd pass you.
Yeah,
and so like everybody's doing their best 5 or 6 minutes. People come from Milwaukee, right. People are coming over from Indianapolis, and so it was like. That was the only. That's where it got a little competitive.
Sure,
because you were like, "You're passing, I'm not." Like, fuck you! Like, are you fucking serious?
Right. See what works with one
person. I remember Bob Palos drew his headshot. He wanted you to have a headshot. Bob Palos drew a headshot and gave it to Bert. Bert did not think that was funny.
That's really funny.
I thought it was so funny. He drew a stick figure. He said, "Bob Palos." I was like, "This is incredible. This is so funny." And then Bert was like, "Nope. How am I going to hang this out front?" Like, God damn it, this is so bad.
So funny.
Okay, so you're there. You're in Chicago. Yeah. It's all fun. Like
sure.
People there are funny. You guys are elevating each other.
Yeah.
What leads you to leave in Chicago?
I had a little bit of money in my pocket.
From what?
From working on a cruise ship with Second City.
Oh, so you got far enough in Second City that you were like on their touring company?
I understudied the touring company.
Okay.
I think I technically understudied.
This is the time of like Mike O'Brien and Tim Robinson, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was
Cecily. Was Cecily there? Yeah.
I don't think I ever, you know, I met A.D. Bryant.
Right.
You know, I think I did a couple like improv sets with her, but I don't think I crossed paths with Cecily, although she might have been there at the same time.
But you know, Pat O'Brien he's the king, right, at that time?
Oh, yeah. Pat and Tim were the funniest. Vanessa Bayer was doing,
yes.
You know, me and Vanessa kind of came up in the stand-up scene together, and we started understudying Second City at the same time.
Cool.
And stuff. So I did a bunch of stuff with her. And yeah, Mike and Tim were like the funniest, you know?
Still are.
Just so funny. And yeah, and obviously still are.
Right.
That was like, yeah. I remember, oh, sorry. I remember like getting on a cruise ship. And, you know, they asked me, like, do you want to do a cruise ship? I had done one before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I don't want to, like, miss an opportunity. And they were like, well, you know, like, I don't want an opening to happen on the touring company and then me not be able to Right. I'm on the ship. Like, nobody's leaving. I've talked to everybody. No one's leaving. I was like, okay. And so I go on the cruise ship. Sure enough, I find out somebody leaves and some guy steps in, you know, and it was a guy that I had never even heard of,
mm-hmm.
who didn't even live in Chicago. He was from Detroit, you know.
Sam Richardson.
Well,
I'm joking.
It was Tim.
It was Timmy Robb.
And I was like,
I've never called him before.
And then the first time I saw him perform, I was like, oh, it wouldn't have mattered if I was there. He's the funniest human being of all time, you know. Like,
that's fun. Okay, yeah. No, he's...
I almost got, you know, him and Tim is just, yeah, he's just the best. And then you know, him and Mark Ratterman were on a improv... Or they were on one of the touring companies together, and I got real close. Andy Myra, who was the director, was like, hey, the third guy's stepping down. Would you want to hop on with Tim and Mark? And I've been like, oh my God. I remember like talking to Tim and Mark right. about it, like, that would be so awesome, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think they pitched it to the person who casts, and she wasn't into it. Ugh. I think she was like, I think her thing was like, you guys are like, I can't have three nuts. You know, I think there needs to be like a...
Some grounded
There needs
thing.
To be three different guys. Right. There needs to be like, you're this type of guy, or that type
well,
of guy.
Well, I mean, I think You Should Leave has proved her absolutely correct. Everybody wants very grounded sketches. They hate when things go from off the wall to crazier. Everyone's right that everything should be grounded and so normal. Everyone hates it when things are just funny. It's really awful when things are just funny. Everyone despises it.
It's so sad. I bet it's obviously satisfying to Tim. It was so satisfying to me to learn that all of Tim's pitches from SNL that didn't get on became the most talked about comedy of the year. So satisfying to be like, see, you guys are wrong. I'm right. This is funny. You guys lost out on funny by not.
I was there.
Yeah, yeah.
It was crazy.
Like, I remember hanging out with you and Tim and Mike. We went to play the pins. At some Kettle of Fish, maybe, or some bar.
Yeah.
And you guys sort of give me the breakdown of certain...
How sad we all were?
Some certain frustrations we all were having over
yeah, there. You went and hung out with three guys having a mental breakdown.
I mean, I was like, well, that's a bummer. It was a bummer because you guys are so funny, and for you guys to be frustrated at the thing that we all, I think a lot of us are like, well, we would love to have that job. And on top of it, we would love to, you know, be doing things at the caliber you guys all were, for you guys to sort of be like in that situation and upset and miserable. And just to hear like what you guys were pitching me and that were like, that was not getting sold.
I mean, look, they were pitching things way above me, but Tim was pitching, I Think You Should Leave. Tim pitched, I'm not speaking for him, but like,
yeah,
obviously they're funnier because it's not live. Like, live sketches are really take away.
It's so weird.
Well, and maybe just it's new and, you know, nuanced and stuff like that, but I don't know. But yeah, no, Tim was as funny. We both know.
Yeah.
This is not the Tim Robinson Appreciation Podcast, but right. It should be because he fucking rocks. Yeah. Tim was as funny then as he always is.
Sure.
Like, and he was told he wasn't funny by that place in that moment. Yeah. And that's crazy.
Crazy.
Okay. But you're doing, let's go back to Chicago before this turns into me spiraling, which this podcast does so often. You're back. Also, I opened up my computer like last night.
Yeah.
Just because I was like, Samson's Hotel with my girlfriend. And I was like, hey, what do you want to watch? Just like the big thing is Saturday Night Live. And I was just like, this is why I have trouble. Like, I've blocked it on everything. I can't get away from this fucking place.
Right. It's not like, you know, I was a little disappointed I didn't move further up the Second City like ranks, you know? Because, I mean, this is the reason I left to get back to...
Yes, sorry.
So the reason I left...
I hijacked this.
I did hop on a... I hopped on a cruise ship, and then I had money, and I was like, well, you know, and I was at a point where I was like... I was in at every show in Chicago, which was a dream of mine.
When I got to Chicago... I was excited to be in a room with you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sincerely, I was like, oh my God, it's Nevada. He goes up before TJ Miller at the Fizz.
It's so funny. I remember walking by Zany's when I first got to Chicago and just staring up that sign and being like, man, if I ever got set foot on stage, I will have made it.
I couldn't walk into the Hollywood Improv because I had the shakes.
Wow.
Like to walk, not to perform.
Just to walk in.
Go there. Have a beer there. I couldn't do it. And then I was like, ugh.
I guess that's like a little bit of a goal. You don't, what is it? I don't know. There's some analogy probably. But you know, when you just, you see the sun, so you see the rainbow. And you get, and then you're in the rainbow, and it's still, the rainbow still seems far away from you, or something like that. I mean, it's like, yeah, you don't, that whole like, well, ten year old Brooks would know you did this and that, how amazing. Right. But then you're in, and you're like,
Hampton Young has the best joke about this. He's like, I lost a bunch of weight, and I was still depressed, and that's when I realized the calls were coming in from inside the house. It's a perfect joke. Like, wow, I guess I got to fix me, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you go, you're on this cruise ship.
Yeah, I get back, I got some cash.
And now you're like, I can do it. I did Chicago. I won Chicago.
I think I had no apartment, you know, and I was a little, I'd also kind of said to Second City, if you don't hire me in a year, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
I gave them a year.
And they like to pocket you.
I'd seen people kind of like spend 12 years. I don't think I'm overestimating, but I mean, from the second they like, they would understudy for 3 years, and then they would take a year off, and then they would tour for 3 years, get a year off.
I took one class at Second City, the one class, like 101 or whatever the fuck it is, and I was like, yo, I want to be on this, I want to be on main stage like this year, and they were basically like, it's going to be 5 years. I go, I'm gone,
I'm not
doing that.
Yeah,
I can't.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was wrong, but like at the same time, I don't think they were right either. Like,
yeah, I mean,
it's just such people wait forever for that shit.
You wait so long.
Too long.
And also there's no guarantee. I didn't want to like get in this line and have the store be closed by the time I got to the front, you know, like, so I was like, well, I got some, I'm so curious what's going on in New York. I got to know what's going on in New York. So I'm going to go to New York and see what's going on. And I gave him a year. If you don't hire me in a year, I also felt I got to keep my word, you know? Yeah. So I go to New York. I get an apartment with Jared Logan and Nate Fernald. A week after I sign the lease, I get a call from Second City going, hey, we got a opening in the touring company.
Ugh.
And I was like, I signed the lease.
Yeah, it's not main stage, guys. I'm here.
Yeah.
You would have gone back for main stage, right? You would have.
I guess I would have, yeah.
You would have had to. Mentally, you'd spend enough time.
I think so, yeah. But they never put anybody from not touring to
I understand. I'm just saying, like,
right.
They still held some power.
Oh, I absolutely. If for some by miracle they would have made me skip the whole thing, yeah. But that's
right.
Yeah, I was just ready to. I was just ready to go.
Yeah, and then you go to New York at like peak New York fun times. Like you got to ride this like fun alt wave of, not necessarily alt DIY. Is what I like to call it more than anything.
I mean, yeah, there was a lot of good shows up there when we
this
got
is
up
the
there.
Best.
And you're running all over the city. You're doing like, I mean, to do some, doing three shows, four shows a night, several nights a week, you know.
I was home summer because like I'm in this middle of working on this TV show right now, and it's like start, stop, start, stop, start, stop, notes, 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 and I'm like, and that's daily at SNL, like of like, hey, you think you got it, you don't, and then I was like, how did I deal with it then? I was like, I did stand up every night.
Yeah.
It like clears your fucking head. Yeah. If you can get up every night, a couple times if you want,
yeah,
it really calms you down.
How much stand up were you doing when you were on SNL?
Oh, fuck. Probably 7-8 shows a week. Like
every night?
Not Tuesdays. Sometimes Tuesdays.
That's your big night.
Tuesdays are writing night, but sometimes I would take a break. This is when Eugene Merman had his Bell House show every Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
And he would sometimes hit me up, do you want to come do Bell House? And I was like, that's more beneficial for me than writing here right now mentally.
Yeah.
So I would bounce to go do that. But yeah. Like you get New York, like it's like I could lie about what was going on at the show too and be like, hey, I'm working on this update. Can I hop up? Of course. I just go on stage and I have no update that week. I lied a lot.
Saying you were gonna do.
I'm working on an update for Saturday. Can I run it?
And then when they didn't see you do an update.
Oh, Saturday. Every time you mean? You mean every single time I lied about it? It's like, dude, that show is a golden ticket for stand up in that city.
Oh,
because you're like, I'm really busy. I got to get back. Can I go up?
Yeah.
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 So it was bullshit. But I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, stand up, like, saved my goddamn brain there. Same with you, probably.
I mean, that has to be great to sort of like have that. I mean, how did Tim and Mike? I guess they had their improv.
I don't understand how any. I would sit at the show, and me and Che were the only two stand-ups. Uh-huh. And I was like, anybody who doesn't have this
other
release,
yeah.
I don't know how you guys aren't killing yourselves. Because this is so difficult. Like, because it's just like one thing to be told you're not funny. Okay, I'm going to go talk in the front of a crowd. I am funny.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the ability to go prove someone wrong, like that night, I couldn't handle it.
Also had to be great for, like, I feel bad for the spouses of the significant others of these people that have to just get an earful every night.
I mean, I feel bad for my girlfriend fiance at the time. Like, I was just like, can't come home. I got to go do stand-up. She's like, what? Yeah, I was like, otherwise I'm going to come home and I'm going to be a mess.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to come home and I'll still be a mess, but a happy mess.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but you go to New York and you're there when I move there. So you spent a lot of time there.
I think I was there for 6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what led you to come out to L.A.?
I think it was just time.
That seems to be you did it right. Chicago, New York, L.A. You got to end up here. Otherwise, you go crazy.
At some point, there feels like a hamster spinning a wheel. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like what else now? You know, like, it's great to, like, get to do so many sets that you really get to work on yourself as a comic and your set and all that kind of stuff. But then, like, at some point, you're just trying to, like, do the same thing over and over. Well, like, you're just trying to kill at the Bell House again.
Tell me
if
you had this, because it got to the point where I had to stop trying to do so many sets in a night because it would become like each set didn't matter. They were all a blur. I was like, what if I do two sets that matter every night?
And then kind of like put more thought into it.
Yes, into those two sets, then six sets where I'm just like, you know, just like, well, who cares? This set didn't work. I have three more.
And you're not really working on the set because you're not like thinking about
it. No, you were not working. I wasn't working on it at all. I was just riding around, drinking, doing as much. I was like, I did six sets. That's making me better. And it wasn't.
It just also felt like there was they say that with improv too. You can't just do improv all the time, otherwise you have nothing to draw from for your set. You're just trying to. All you have is draw from is the thing you did at the last improv show.
Right.
And I don't know. I don't know. There's probably. It just totally depends on the. I think it's probably case by case scenario.
Absolutely.
You know, I tried to, like, in that taxi ride. You know what I would do though. That taxi ride in between. Mm-hmm. That subway ride in between sets, you can either look at your phone or you can look at your notebook.
Well, it was all notebook,
But if you're looking at your, you could fuck around and look at your phone.
Well, I'd ride my bike everywhere. So I would re-listen to my set on my bike.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, it may be better.
Yeah.
The greatest train ride I want to talk about your special. To me, there's no greater train ride that anyone can ever take in the whole world But this train ride, it goes from Night Train on Monday night to Whiplash, which is Night Train is at Littlefield, which is in Brooklyn.
Okay, yeah.
And then you take you murder there because it's the second best show in the world.
Oh, that was Monday night?
Monday night. And then you take the train to Whiplash, which is at UCB, which is the first best show in the world. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You could do both.
And that train ride was like it's like a half hour and it's just like everything is so good right now.
You know, my favorite was an above ground version of that, where you kill it the one show in Brooklyn, and then you take that New York drive over the Brooklyn Bridge, you know, and you get to see like the city, and it feels real New York-y, know, it feels like, and you're getting ready for the next set in Manhattan.
Yeah.
I think I picture that because I remember so many times being like, remember this. This was why you were here.
But I'm going to shoot you straight. The train from Littlefield to Chelsea, that was above ground over the Brooklyn Bridge. So you got the view. You got the view with the feelings.
Okay, yes.
Because you're like, look, that went good, but this is about to go better.
That's great. That's great.
Okay.
That's great.
How the fuck did you end up at Bill Maher? And then let's talk about your special.
Well, I mean, part of the reason I think I left New York is I couldn't get anybody to hire me.
There's three jobs there. There's three jobs. There's the Daily Show, SNL, and then now it's the Tonight Show's back.
Right. but it's like, I think that's what I felt. I felt like I was like, oh, it doesn't matter how good I do at these shows. There's nothing going to come from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's sort of like a place that is can really mess with your head, you know? And it's just like, well, what am I doing then? I'm beating my head against a wall. I need to do something different. Otherwise, I'm just that, whatever that thing is. If you keep doing the same thing with the same, getting the same results and think a different result is going to happen, you go insane. And so I was like, well, I need to switch it up and go to LA because this is not really, I don't see this as a path to anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it was. And so I moved to LA and I think, you know, so like Ferguson happens in, you know, in Ferguson and you know, and like
face, not Craig Ferguson,
right,
St. Louis,
Michael Brown,
yes.
And and I think this sort of began what would be a few years of me doing a lot more, less absurdist, more sort of social political rants on Facebook, which I think we all learn now is incredibly unhealthy.
Yes.
But at the time, we didn't know.
And no, it's like how we're going to find out about our phones in a year.
Right.
I'm so addicted.
In the metaverse. This will be the, yeah. Or yeah, us losing ourselves in the metaverse and all that.
I'm
kind of
so,
stuff.
I wake up and I look, I'm misreading so bad.
Yes, so. Okay. Yeah, this,
so you're, but yeah. You're doing a thing on a thing we haven't found out is poison yet.
Right.
You're a Mad Hatter.
But I'm.
You're playing with mercury.
But I'm.
And we don't know about mercury.
I'm
yet.
Joking though. I'm right. I'm using humor to express these points. You know, but it's not something. It's not the type of stuff I would normally use humor for on stage. You right. know, I think on stage it's more ridiculous and absurdism, and then this is sort of like, well, hold on, you guys want. The protesters that are kneeling, you want them to get fired, okay? But then the protesters in the streets, you keep yelling, get a job. What do you want? Do you want people right. to work or not work?
That's,
that's funny to me.
That's fun.
And when everyone's screaming about this, and I keep seeing this incongruity in what they're complaining about, I can't help but point out to the person who says we're the party of Lincoln and he has a Confederate flag shirt on, right. how you're sort of being a little bit contradictive, you know? Mm-hmm. And so just like doing a lot of like kind of rants about that. And then, so I had one summer where I like filled out, oh, I must have done like 14 writing packets. You know, I did it for, I wrote one for like SNL and Fallon and Corden and Colbert and Sarah Silverman Show and The Opposition with Jordan Klepper and Daily Show. And I mean, that's seven right there. I think I'm forgting, you know, five more. And it started like in June. And it went all the way to October, and I just could not get any of them. And the very last one in October was Real Time with Bill Maher. And I had that moment, you know, in Good Will Hunting when, you know, because at that point you're just like, it just feels like I'm spending a week writing a script and then throwing it into the
Yeah, you're like, I'll give it you what you want, but I don't care anymore.
You didn't, no one's going to, it just feels like the same thing that I felt while I was leaving New York. It's like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how much work I put into it. They're just, it's just not... Even something is like working against me in a way that I don't seem to have any control over. And then I felt like that scene in Good Will Hunting where it's like, you know, when he had to pick out a belt and he's like, what belt you pick out? It's like, I picked out the biggest belt just to beat the shit out of me. And I was like, so Mar, I had like a second. I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to phone this thing in. And I was like, no, fuck it. I'm going to go harder at this thing than I've gone all the other packets. I'm canceling all my shows this week. If I'm going to lose this thing again, I'm going to lose it going down fucking hard. And so I spent, like, I canceled all my shows that week. I took all the packets that I had written in the past, like, 6 months, and I took, like, what I thought were the best jokes from all these that I could put into this thing, and I went to all my Facebook rants over the years and found the ones that got, like, the most likes and the most, like, shares and stuff, and pulled an editorial out of that to pitch, because I do think that, like, while there was this version of me on stage, there's this other, like, Facebook version of me that sort of fits with the sensibility of real time.
Right. You have to say 2017 Facebook version of you. You can't say current, because other people...
Oh, no, I haven't... This once I got on the show...
Pre-poisonous.
I had to stop doing Facebook, because okay. I had an outlet that
you
I...
You had an outlet, of I course. I didn't outlet. Mean to cut you yeah. off. I'm saying
no,
this
no,
is
no.
incredible.
No, that's I think it's a good point to
Facebook
make
is not the same anymore.
Yeah, it feels like... Yeah, yeah. It was like an old mall or something. Yeah, like, yeah. People still hang out here?
And then the people walking around, you're like, well, they hang out here, but right. I'm here too?
Yeah, I gotta get out of here.
Okay. So it worked.
And it fucking worked. They called me and they're like, we want to have a meeting with you. Make sure you're not crazy. And make sure you are. And then they hired me, and I'm about to go to my fifth season.
That's the coolest thing ever. Okay, so how did you shoot the special? And then we'll get the fuck out of here.
The first year of Bill Maher, I had a month off in July, and so I was like, I want to make a special, you know? So I'm going to go to...
I would say you do more with comedy than anyone I know. And I mean that anyone I know, not just anyone I hang out with, anyone I talk to. You do more with a format than anyone I've ever met. So it would make sense that you would make the craziest special of all time.
I don't have a family.
I'm saying this is a good
nothing
thing.
Else to
this
do.
Is a great format. Like you fuck with things in a way that's really, really cool. Because your comedy special was a radio show that was, you know, I mean, I just loved it.
Well,
Nick
thanks.
Arcade. I remember listening to it. I was in the Philadelphia train station. I very vividly remember sitting on an uncomfortable bench waiting to take a train back to New York from Philly. And I put it on and I loved it.
For amusement only.
Yeah.
With the director's commentary.
Oh, God, it was so good. Yeah.
We'll see with the Jimmy Fallon thing with the set list. I think it's like. I think in Chicago, what I really like to do was I like to do these sets, but I was like, what if there's like some kind of framework around it, you know,
yeah.
Where you could kind of like have an extra layer. So it's a set, but also I'm trying to like put out this fire at the same time.
And, that's so fun.
Just kind of
that's a good way to look at it. Like, okay, that's really funny. I never thought about it that way. You're like, I want to do stand up, but I want the audience to think I also have a bigger problem happening. That's so funny. That's so much like, that's very, very funny. I never thought about that way. I'm like, I got to do this, but there's things that I'm really bothering me.
Right. I mean, it's a little like, I think that's what the Muppet Show kind of was. They're trying to put on the show, but at the same time, the show's falling apart behind them. I guess that's one example of putting a layer on top
right.
of it.
Yeah.
And so this thing is like, you know, I like I love stand-up specials. I love stand-up albums. My issue with stand-up specials for me personally mm-hmm. is that I understand the necessity of it and why they are how they are, but I do think that like it's not watching a special as a video, it doesn't add anything in a certain way. Okay, so if you listen to an audio album, you can, you know, is it a coyote?
Yeah, as a coyote just walked by. It's telling us to wrap it up.
Hilarious. It's functional in that you can do other things while you listen to an album.
Yes.
You can go jogging, you can drive, you can do other kind of stuff, you know? But to ask me to sit down on my couch and stare at something that I could have the same experience while I'm doing something else, especially with how many I listen to, I don't know why you're asking me to do that. It's not as good as a live version, you know, where it's just it's the same thing but live. So it's like a lesser version of a live special and not as convenient as an audio special. So, but I also enjoy them. But if you could use the video, why not take advantage of that? Instead of it having two minuses, how could you use the video so it actually adds something that you couldn't get from an audio or you couldn't get from a live version?
Mm-hmm.
And I think like Chelsea Peretti has like with the cut twos of the audience where they're goofy.
Very funny, yeah.
It's very
it's like
funny.
A race car driver.
And you can't get that in other mm-hmm. in the other scenarios. And Julio Torres has the Shapes HBO special mm-hmm. where he does that. And those things are like, oh, they add something to it. So I also love the specials like Jerry Seinfeld comedian. When I first moved to Chicago, that poster was on all the Post No Bills work sites and everything.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, in Bitter Buddha with Eddie Pepitone, you know, those like kind of documentary-esque, them running around the city, mm-hmm. which was why we love Chicago so much, running around the city. I love those specials. So I wanted to do something that was like running around the city, but kind of mockumentary running around the city, but then adding something that only video can sort of like do. And so that's what I kind of wanted to put together. So I did it the first, my first hiatus month, that July. I shot it then.
Yep.
Shot I needed it a little bit more. Shot that a year later, and then it's been 4 years, and I've been slowly editing over the past 4 years, and then we finally got it done.
Dope. Well, I'm pretty jacked up to go watch it now.
Well, good. Thanks, man.
You did a great pitch. Sometimes people are like, I don't know, man. I want to go see this now.
I put so much time and effort and money in this.
I'm fucking stoked.
I hate trying to like pitch myself.
No, you didn't pitch it. You pitched how, what you believe in, what you did. I'm so excited to watch it. Fat Rod, I really appreciate you doing the podcast. I'll put a link to it in this episode description. Watch the special. Anything? Yeah. Oh, actually, I forgot. I know this is your second time doing the podcast.
Yeah.
And you have been texting me a lot about how you were bummed because at the first time you did it, you texted me like almost too much, to be honest. Where you're like, I want to do a better job at the outro because you know I always have the guest do the outro, and you're always like, I need another swing, and I say, Nikki, I only have one person, but now I'm. So
you blocked me on Twitter because I kept DMing you about it so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we don't have each other's phone numbers. So Vatterott, fine. Take us out.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you go into the third and final year of the pandemic, go out and you be the best pandemic you can be. Good night or good morning, wherever you are.